The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, everyone. So, I guess the one announcement I'll make is follow-up from last week a little bit. Last week we had our long, dear Sangha member, Rainbow, in the hospital dying, and we knew she was dying last Monday, and then on Tuesday she very peacefully died around noon, and she had a very peaceful passing. She was more or less unconscious for the last 24 hours of her life, but then right near the end, Andrea Fella came there to see her and was chanting. Rainbow loved the Discourse on Loving Kindness, the Discourse Metta Sutta, and she actually had it in her will that or whatever that she wants it chanted for her memorial service. So Andrea came and was chanting it, and while she was chanting it, Rainbow opened her eyes and looked and heard, and then quietly passed away. So that was it was very unfortunate to lose her and have her go. But it's in that she was kind of her wishes. She was ready, given the circumstances that it happened. So I don't know how to transition from that to the topic of my talk, especially given the topic, because I thought I would talk about boredom. And hopefully make it interesting for you. There's a few things that have prompted me to want to give this talk. One is a six-year-old at home, who his seemingly favorite thing he likes to say these days is, "I am bored." Now this is, I think, shorthand for "I don't know what to do. You're supposed to figure it out for me. And you better do it now." So that's rather, it's getting kind of boring now that he does it a lot. So we're trying to work with that. And then also on recent retreats that I've taught, a number of people have come for interviews on the retreats and talked about boredom arising in their meditation and in their practice, especially on the retreat. And I responded in some ways, some of the things I usually say about boredom, because it does come up from time to time. And I've been reflecting on a little bit since I gave those people advice. On retreat, I only have a few minutes to say something helpful. But as I've been thinking about it, boredom is a very big topic. And it's like a whole family of attitudes or approaches or feelings. And there's many things that can bring up boredom. And probably when I've given relatively brief advice to people about boredom on retreat, I've been sometimes maybe too brief, maybe miss them, because it could be so wide-ranging, the kind of issues that come up around boredom. So I thought I would take the opportunity for today to give a talk on boredom, and then we can add it to the series of talks I've been doing in the course of the spring and summer on emotions. So we have one more emotion for that series. Are you ready for boredom? So boredom, I think of as, or how it's often seen, is lack of interest, pervasive lack of interest that comes along sometimes with lethargy, with a kind of pervasive kind of feeling of kind of, sometimes with anxiety or angst, sometimes with aversion to the state, to what's going on. The aversion part can be very, very subtle. And sometimes Buddhist teachers will say that boredom is a form of aversion. There's some kind of resistance or pushing away or dislike about something that's going on. and but certainly a lack of interest, as well as a very difficult time to pay attention. It's very hard to engage when there's boredom there. And there's a wonderful kind of, not wonderful, but there's a reciprocal relationship between our capacity to pay attention and becoming bored, and boredom and our capacity to pay attention. So the more bored we are, the harder it is to pay attention. The harder it is to pay attention, the easier it is to get bored. So people who have attention deficit disorder, for example, have a much easier time to get bored because they have a hard time mustering their attention to pay attention, to be engaged, to be involved in what they're doing. Boredom can be a great problem for people. Excuse me while I try to clear my throat. I apologize. So boredom can be a problem because people will sometimes engage in all kinds of unskillful behavior when they're bored. Having bored kids at home is a recipe for problems. They have two kids at home, and so when one of them is bored, one of the problems it takes is the bored one will egg on the other one in order to get things unboring in the house. And then they're screaming and yelling and coming to us upset, you know. He did. And it seems like they kind of, in the boredom, they're kind of looking for trouble, looking for something to engage, you know, some unskillful things. It's said that when people are bored, they're much more likely to do addictive behaviors of different kinds, smoking, anything, all kinds of stuff, drug problems. It's been pointed out that in studies that one of the primary, not necessarily causes, but one of the primary conditions for drug use among teenagers is boredom. And when they're bored, they're more likely to use. When they're not bored, then they're less likely to use. And so another kind of behaviors can be problematic. In meditation, one of the problems with boredom is someone might give up their meditation practice. Other things become more interesting. You're sitting meditating and you're bored, and it just occurs to you that the freezer needs to be defrosted, and that is infinitely more interesting than sitting there meditating. And so up you go. Or you just abandon it, forget it, this is boring. I don't know what these Buddhists are talking about, following your breath. The breath is the most boring thing in the whole world. They don't, and I don't know what they don't know what they're talking about when they say it's interesting. And it's, I just looked and I looked and I looked and I paid attention and I just couldn't find anything interesting in my breath whatsoever. And I'm bored and off I go. It can be very discouraging. So people can lose their faith in the practice, in their spirituality, because somehow they can't just find their way in. It's just boring and it doesn't seem interesting. Nothing grabs them, nothing engages them. Sometimes the boredom of meditation might continue meditating, but it's kind of like opening up the space in the mind to try to look for something else in the mind to do. So fantasy can take over. And we get interested in the fantasy and reinforcing tendencies to think about, to obsess about things that maybe we shouldn't be obsessing about. Some people seem more prone to boredom than others. And I read a study once where they said that, I don't know if this is true, but the study claimed that extroverts are much easier bored than introverts. Maybe introverts have more an inner life that keeps them interested in things. And extroverts, I suppose the theory is that they need more external stimulus in order to stay engaged and interested. And I've seen in myself occasional tendency that if I do a lot of things, really busy, doing a lot of things, a lot of stimulus coming in, and all the stimulus stops, there's this momentum inside to want to do more. And even though I don't need to do anything, it's like this automatic pilot. And I think that there's kind of a tendency to be overstimulated in our society. You go so many places, public places, and they have televisions that are on. And people have their iPods in. And today I learned that they have waterproof iPods. And the person said that I guess she went to the pool and the people had the iPod strapped to their arm and I guess the plug, their, you know, the earphone in their ear and swimming laps. So that's quite something, I thought, because you know you want to be able, you want to be efficient, and so you want to be able to do two things at once at least. I mean that's old fashioned, two things at once, and because you know two people always whatever reason, people are often want to be stimulated. It becomes self reinforcing, because if you not keep yourself stimulated and engaged, then it can be uncomfortable, and so then you that discomfort or boredom prompts you to be look out for more stimulus. The more stimulus you have, the more alienated a person becomes with themselves, less in touch with themselves they are. And then they have less skills and less capacity to know themselves and be with themselves in a quiet way. And so this wonderful skills and capacity to sit quietly and enjoy oneself with nothing going on becomes a foreign idea. Something always has to be always there entertaining us or doing it for us, keeping us going. Music's always going in the background to keep us kind of jazzed up, perhaps. Some people are like that. Television is always on. I've heard of people, I haven't seen it, but I've heard of people where they have television in most of the rooms in the house. Certainly, the kitchen, living room, and bedrooms, and all of them are on. And so when you go around, you're not going to miss anything. Now, sometimes the drive to always stay stimulated is there because people would like to avoid being present for themselves, being present for what's going on in the environment or in themselves as a way of distracting themselves from themselves. And so it's kind of running away. And so when all the stimulus stops, they haven't learned how to be with what's going on inside. And I've also read that one of the conditions for boredom is a lack of self-awareness, lack of ability to recognize one's own emotions and feelings. When there's a poor capacity to recognize oneself, there's a higher chances for boredom. Doesn't mean that that's the only necessary cause for boredom, but it's one of the conditions that can happen. So there is different kinds of boredom. There's the kind of boredom that comes when we're asked to do something that we don't want to do. And so there's aversion to the activity. And sometimes that aversion takes up a form of subtle resistance or subtle kind of shutting down or lethargy kind of drains us of energy, and it just seems so boring. And I call this, as some of you know, the Sears mind, because when I was 9 or 10 years old, my mom would take me to Sears to buy clothes. And Sears is right. Isn't Sears an inherently very boring place? It just they must design it that way, just like built into it, in the way they. Everything about the smell and everything is inherently boring, And as soon as we leave Sears, my mom would say, "Should we get some ice cream?" Boom! I wasn't so tired anymore. I wasn't so bored, just boom. It's amazing how quickly it can turn. And because ice cream is inherently interesting, right? I keep using the word inherently because there is no thing and no circumstance, no situation, no experience, which is inherently boring. Boredom is an activity of the mind. It's an attitude, it's something very subjective. In Buddhism, we say it's an activity in the mind. The mind has to do something. Mind has to work in a particular way for us to be bored. And so usually I think people, when they assess something as being boring, they're blaming something. What we do in Buddhism is we actually turn around and look, try to understand what is that activity in us that is prompting or causing or bringing about that feeling of boredom that we have. And that means taking responsibility for what we're feeling rather than projecting the blame elsewhere. So this is a very important principle in Buddhism all around, this willingness to turn around and get to know what's here. So one cause of boredom is a subtle, or maybe not so subtle, aversion, and then a shutting down because we're doing something we don't want to do. Sometimes it has to do because it's very repetitive, dull, and uninteresting. And some things are uninteresting if you do it often enough, and you don't have any way of kind of engaging with it a little more creatively. But some things are uninteresting because of the relationship we have to it, the attitude we have to it, the meaning we have about it. That this is not something you want to do. In a different situation, it becomes very interesting. A lot has to do with the meaning assigned to it. So I don't know what a good example would be, but it's like making a meal. You know, I've been bored sometimes making meals for my kids who have very narrow palates. Again? You want that again? But then someone else comes over to eat with us and I'll make the same thing, but now I'm making it for more people. You know, it's like it has different meaning, it has value or something beyond these, the usual way of doing it. So that's one kind of boredom. So the kind of subtle resistance, pushing away, not liking what's happening, not liking what we're asked to do. Another form of resistance is not being able to do what you want to do. So you want to do something, but it's not available. You can't do it now. I want my dad to read stories to me. And my six-year-old son, he's discovered this little series of books for, I guess, six-year-olds. It's been called Drune. And it's this fantasy story for six-year-olds, a fantasy world. And we are now reading the 33rd book. And he can't get enough of them. And he seems they're always very interested. And sometimes I've read them, been reading them, and I realize for the last page, I don't have a clue what I read. And so I've been very creative to try to find ways to stay interested. Because, you know, they're all written in a very formulaic way. And, you know, you kind of... And now we're up to volume 33. And luckily, he only has 34, the author, so... So, and there are times when I felt like I want to do something else. You know, I don't want to sit here reading this book. You know, it's been nice, you know, for a while here, but this is too much now. And I have other things I'm more interested in doing. And my frustration of not being able to do what I want to do is part of the reason why I get bored. And the feeling of boredom, kind of this frustration. So frustration that translates or transforms into boredom. Lack of interest in what's happening because I'd rather do something else. And then there's a boredom that comes from an inability to pay attention. So, as I said earlier, sometimes that comes from having some kind of maybe attention problems, maybe not having trained the mind to pay attention. Training in mindfulness is now understood to be a very useful way to overcome boredom for a lot of people. Just simply being able to learn to pay attention more carefully and sustain the attention in what we're doing so the mind doesn't jump around and lose attention and lose its engagement is a way is overcoming boredom. When I was first introduced to this practice of vipassana, I was in Thailand and I did many weeks of intensive training in vipassana at a monastery. And after about maybe 8 weeks or so of this intensive training in mindfulness, the abbot of the monastery, for some reason, asked me or invited me to come with him to Bangkok for a funeral, a memorial service, for a low-ranking Thai general. So it was rather elaborate, glitzy, Disneyland kind of event, you know. All these Thai people there. And everything was in Thai. And I got bored. And you know, here I've been sitting for 8 weeks in a little hut, you know, not talking to anyone, nothing's going. Huts, you know, bare walls. You know, it's like 8 by 8 or something. And hadn't talked to almost anyone for 8 weeks. No entertainment. Hadn't read anything. I hadn't done anything except sitting there watching my breath and doing walking meditation. You know, I think it's the recipe for boredom, right? And I hadn't been bored at all. But then in this elaborate ceremony in this glitzy kind of hall with all this stuff and paraphernalia and ceremony and all that, and in Thai language, I got bored. So it took me a little while there, sitting there being bored. And I think part of what kind of kept me bored and kind of engaged was a certain level of self-pity. So combine boredom and self-pity and you're in real trouble. And so it took me a little while, and then finally I said, you know, wait a minute. I've been doing all this intensive mindfulness training. Why don't I use it? So I started paying attention, just started bringing my attention up to the forefront and noticing what was going on. And very quickly the boredom just vanished, just by engaging mindfully in what was going on in the present moment. So that's fine. That was the situation I could bring my mindfulness up. But there's some situations where the mindfulness can't be mustered up. Somehow it's too jumpy and you can't get focused, or there's not enough motivation, or there's some resistance to the motivation, something standing in the way, and we just can't get engaged. Fear can sometimes make the mind jump around, so it's hard to settle on something. And so sometimes the fear has to be addressed. Sometimes other emotions, so it can be anger or deep sense of hurt that is right on close to the surface. And so it needs to be addressed, but it's difficult to address. We're reluctant to address it. And that reluctance sometimes translates to attention jumping around and not being able to settle anywhere. That's sometimes a reason. Sometimes people are tired. That can cause a difficulty to pay attention. There's a variety of reasons. So depending on why we're bored, different approaches need to be used to deal with it. Certainly the common approach is pay attention, bring your attention and explore it. But sometimes a deeper analysis and deeper issues need to be addressed. So for example, sometimes boredom is not boredom about what's happening right here and now. But it might be a deep-seated frustration or inability to follow one's heart's deepest desires. What one most wants to do with their life, what's most meaningful and important for one's life, is somehow a person's not able to follow through on and do. So, maybe because they feel stuck in a job or stuck in a relationship or stuck in a certain way of living. And so what they want to do is they want to go, you know, anything. But it's too risky to do that. Wow, then I won't make no guarantee that I'll have money, or then I won't get my parents' approval, or then I won't, you know, it'd be, you know, shake up my relationship and I can't do that. And society won't approve of this. And there's a lot of reasons why people hold back from following their inner dreams, the dreams they have for themselves or their desires for what they want to do. And sometimes that holding back and not living one's dreams or one's desires has a cost. Something is shut down or pushed down or repressed. And that sense of then subtle maybe discouragement, subtle lack of loss of inspiration, loss of faith, some kind of subtle depression can lend itself to being bored with what's left. You know, doing this job or being in this relationship or doing this is not really what I want to do. I'm kind of stuck in it. I really want to do something else. And so in that kind of situation, it might require some really deep soul searching in a sense, and really questioning of one's priorities and what one lives one's life. And is it really, you know, is it really a matter of kind of being mindful of a life which shouldn't be lived? And rather what we need is to change some behavior, change how we live, and maybe follow a dream we have or follow something. Sometimes we have to look at our values. What are the values that we have that what we think is important? So if what we think is important is money, then pursuing money might be really interesting, and watching your breath might seem boring. And in fact, sitting and watching your breath might interfere with your great capacity to be a moneymaker. I knew one person who had trouble meditating some years ago because he was obsessed with following his stocks. And, you know, that was his, you know, he was much more interested in that. And meditation was much more boring compared to the excitement of the stock market. No one seems to be following the stock market anymore, as they were 5 years ago. One might have values of, you know, or interests. Some of the things we're interested in might not be to our real benefit or the benefit of other people. Some people are really interested in pornography. And I know people have real addiction to it. They come and talk to me about their addictions to that. And it keeps their interest. And one of their, and you know, and rather than kind of, you know, that's somehow something in them keeps orienting towards the pleasure they get from that. And not doing it sometimes leaves them kind of feeling blank or empty or uninspired or dull you know, their life, maybe because their life doesn't have any meaning. So sometimes it's not a matter of being mindful. But again, as I said earlier, maybe a behavioral change. Maybe we have to find some meaning in our life. Meaning is an important thing to have. And if you don't have some kind of meaning, boredom can be the result of that. Another thing to look at is how a boredom is an expression of a sense of self, self-identity, or what we think is important for ourselves. Sometimes boredom arises. It's very interesting that people can be interested in a person or in a thing or something, if that person or activity praises their sense of self, or if it criticizes their sense of self. You know, boy, that person's really angry with me and upset with me, telling me how terrible I am. That person has my, I'm interested. I'm attentive. I don't like it, but I'm really attentive. Or this person's praising me. That's great. I'm awake. Thank you. But if the person or the situation, circumstances, has no effect on our sense of self at all, doesn't pump it up or doesn't pump it down, guess what? Some people get bored. Because some people are so oriented around their sense of self and what it's going to do for me, that that if they're not getting somehow that stimulus up or down, then it has no value. And if it has no value, there's no interest. If there's no interest, there can be boredom. And it can be very sad, very painful to be in the receiving end of that kind of boredom as a person, where you're talking to them and they seem to lose interest. I hope my talk on boredom is not causing that for you here. So one of the places to study when we do are mindful of boredom is how does this relate to our sense of self? And are we trying to create or defend or protect the self in some way? And if, you know, and how does boredom arise when our sense of self is not supported, not uplifted, or not criticized or threatened in some way? And here we get to something that's much more core to what many people, the sense of self. And to really look deeply at that, to understand that, can be really transformative. One of the great messages of spirituality, many spiritual traditions, especially the ones that have contemplative practice, is that it's possible, not only possible, but it's quite profound and beautiful to drop the sense of self entirely, to not operate with things circulating and orienting and centered around our self-concept, me, myself, and mine. So much so that the very sense of self, the very sense of of a being here as a self begins to soften, dissolve, and become softer. And there's a kind of sense of openness or transparency and awareness, transparency in body and feeling, kind of porous with the environment around, as a sense of self kind of is seen as being imaginary, seen as being insubstantial, as not seen at all. But to kind of reincorporate a sense of self and play the whole selfing game of trying to be concerned about self-image and how people see me and who I am really and to protect myself and do, you know, this whole kind of world of selfing, which is a certainly important part of human life, to really go turn and look at it very, very deeply and question it. And to have it go poof, to have it kind of disappear, is very interesting, especially in relationship to boredom, because chances are that if you're not operating out of some self-centered concerns, chances are you're not going to get bored. And chances are that something about self-centeredness, something about being oriented around a sense of self, and what this is going to do for me, or how it relates to me, and my desires, and my aversions, and all that, has a key thing to do with this activity of the mind called boredom. So we turn around in mindfulness practice when we're bored, and we look boredom right in the face. And so we're not fooled by it, so we're not pushed around by it, and so we get interested in it. So what does boredom feel like? What does it feel like in the body, that pervasive feeling, maybe your lethargy, or feeling drained, or feeling kind of heavy, or dull? What's it like in the mind? What's it like, what are the beliefs that are operating when we're bored? What are the thoughts that we're telling ourselves? There might be a particular pattern of thinking operating over and over again when we're bored. It might be subtle, so you have to be very subtle in paying attention to it. What are the emotions and feelings that are under the surface of the boredom? There might be a whole, you know, a whole big collection of kind of emotions ready to bubble up if we can just get underneath the surface of the boredom. There's a lot that can go on, a lot to explore there. I think that it's a very valuable thing to do because almost always, not always, not always, but often enough, boredom is rather deleterious for us. And we behave, unfortunately, kind of in unfortunate ways because of it, but also because it's kind of a lost resource. The human heart, the heart that's free, the heart that's able to be present in a vibrant way, the heart that's present in a loving way, in a kind way, is a beautiful thing. The heart that's the mind that's able to be interested in this life is a beautiful thing. And so not to have that is unfortunate. Not to have that is a kind of a, you know, a loss of that vitality. Almost always. Because sometimes boredom is really good. And we don't want to knock boredom down as saying it's just, you know, a bad thing. My favorite boredom quote about how boredom can be good is there was a Zen master named Katagiri Roshi, who was taught here in this country, and he once said, "If it's not boring, it's not Buddhism." Isn't that great? And how I understood that is that if you're enamored in Buddhism, if you're fascinated with Buddhism, this religion out there, this great, grand, you know, world religion that has so much promise and enlightenment, and I'm going to study Buddhism and get a PhD in Buddhism and really kind of get into it, and it's going to be so wonderful, and I'll just be great, and I'll wear all these Buddhism badges and medals, and it'll just be, you know, make life wonderful, and I'll be the savior, and Buddhism is a thing. And it's so interesting. So Buddhism is not found in Buddhism. Isn't that great? So it's very important to, if you're enamored and enchanted about the great promise that Buddhism is going to do for you, at some point, it's fine to be enchanted at first, to be interested. You have to be as a new person, because how are you going to find out that you're supposed to get disenchanted? But at some point, you realize the point is not Buddhism. It's not all the books, not all learning, not all the lists. But rather, the point is to turn the attention around 180 degrees and study the great discourse of the Buddha that's found in your own heart. That this is where Buddhism is, in yourself, not in the books, not in Buddhism out there. So at some point you have to realize that Buddhism is boring so that you can really start doing the work of Buddhism, which is to turn and really do that inner work, be present, do the practice. So that's what I thought Katagiri Rishi meant. It's not, so you're supposed to get at some point disenchanted. And in monastic life, and I think it happens to some degree in lay spiritual life as well, but it's much more dramatic in monastic life because everything's a little more intensified there. All their life is in practice. It's a relatively common phenomenon that after somewhere between 3 and 5 years of residential monastic life, that a lot of people lose interest in the spiritual practice. And sometimes it's been, when I was at Zen Center, many years ago, one of the teachers there said, oh yeah, because in the first years of practice, people are basically trying to find out who they are. And they're just trying to kind of deal with their psychology and doing a little bit of therapy on the cushion. But it takes about 3 to 5 years to do that very important work. And once they have found out who they are, feel a much stronger sense of being centered in themselves and all that, then they're ready to go out in the world and live their life. So that's great. But if they continue beyond that period of time, that's when Buddhist practice starts. I don't know what they were doing before, but that's when Buddha, you know, they really get serious, and that's really when they start delving deeper in. So in monastic life, sometimes there's a period of boredom that sets in between 3 to 5 years, and some people don't survive that period of boredom, and they will leave the practice. But if those people who can hang in there and not get influenced by the boredom and see it through, work with it, can move the practice on to another level. So if that happens to some of you, then you're going to have to now remember. Oh, look at that. I've been practicing for a couple of years now, 3-4 years, and I'm losing interest because this kind of seems kind of boring. You might want to look and see what's really going on for you and really be very, evaluate and study very carefully what the nature of that boredom is and why you're getting bored. And look at what you're getting bored about. And if the boredom is about Buddhism, then use that opportunity to stop studying Buddhism, but start practicing what you studied. And if you practice well, if you practice it well, it's not going to be boring. I suggest that you'll it's very hard to get really bored if you really know how to practice well. Because if you know how to practice well, as soon as you get bored, you'll turn your attention and look that boredom right in the eye. And when you really get to know someone well, no matter who they are, you fall in love with everyone. That's my belief. So if you really turn around and look that boredom right in its eye, you'll fall in love with what you see. And you won't be bored. So, and then the last thing that I wanted to say is that, again, in praise of boredom, is that there's a certain kind of boredom that is fallow time. And fallow time is very important, I believe, where a period of time we don't do anything. We're not involved in a lot of activities and social interactions, but things are really quiet, kind of maybe boring even, so that something in the background in our minds or hearts can process and work through and settle out and do something. And it can't settle out unless, you know, while we're always doing things. So sometimes there's kind of sacred boredom where we're allowing some inner work to move through us and happen. It allows us to reflect more deeply, question and think. So don't be afraid of boredom. But make it part of your practice. Look at it. Try to understand what's going on. And if what you need is long, fallow time, then contentedly allow yourself to be bored when you let some inner work unfold for you. So, I hope that was interesting enough. Oh, and one announcement. For the next three Monday evenings, I'm going to do a series of talks. On the life of the Buddha, on the Buddha. I thought it would be nice for you, hopefully, to hear a little bit about the Buddha himself. Now that I've told you that you're supposed to get disenchanted with Buddhism, maybe it's safe to give some series of talks on the founder of Buddhism. So we'll do three talks on life and a little bit of teachings of the historical Buddha. So many thanks.